Trivita presents Healthy You, inspiration and information to keep you moving towards wellness so you can achieve your life's purpose. Now, here's your host, Michael Ellison.
Welcome and thank you for joining with me today. I think this is going to be a fantastic time that we spend together, and my special guest, whom I have so much respect for and appreciate the fact that he's taking time out of his very busy schedule to be with us today. It's going to be, I think, very informational, and I want to say you're probably going to hear a lot of information perhaps that you are not hearing if you're listening to our traditional newscasters and also our commentators that are out there. There's a lot in our world today and a lot of opinions. I think today you are going to hear, though, information that is science-backed, and you're going to hear information from somebody who has spent over 30 years in family practice medicine. Not only in family practice medicine, he also is a medical consultant to several large companies that you would recognize, and I won't drop those names. But he's also a person who has a population data on the health and well-being of our population. So we're going to have an opportunity to hear from really a medical expert, and we will also question him in regard to how things are different in our world versus other parts of the world, how things are different in regard to various population segments, and what they do in their lifestyle that makes up that difference. So we know that the genetic factor, it's real, but epigenetics has been something that indicates that we have far more choice power to influence our health and our well-being than we ever imagined before. And I want to also put that in another aspect, and that's biblical. Because if biblical, clinical, and scientific align, then we know that we have a commonality that we can be assured to pursue that pathway. And one thing that we know that the scriptures say is that we should not fear, because God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. A sound mind is a sound mind that does look for biblical, does look for clinical, does look scientifically, brings those together in soundness of purpose and decision-making, and that's what you're going to hear today. I am thrilled to have Dr. Scott Conard with us today. Doc, so glad to have you on the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here, Michael. Thank you very much.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting time for us to address, because, you know, the kind of the theme that we talked about that I believe is also important, because there is so much anxiety, and it's, you know, not pandemic, but it is epidemic and it's worldwide. The anxiousness, the fear, and that's for not only for our health, it's also for others, but it's not only for others and their health and the issues there, but it's also the financial aspects, you know, related to so many different families today. So there's reasons, but it's going to be empowering. So the information we give will allow people to live stronger and to live even more powerful in a pandemic world. Now, that may seem almost like a stretch, but we believe, Dr. Conard believes, that you can live stronger and you can live powerfully in this world today. So, Dr. Conard, I'd kind of like to start off with, since you are a researcher and you have such a significant amount of data in your database, let's kind of start with the state of health and wellness in the United States. And I might note right here that that would parallel pretty close to Canada because of our lifestyle, our Western diet, I mean, many aspects. So while we are maybe more specific to U.S. in regard to data, I think it parallels pretty close to our North American neighbor, and we have them listening to us. One other thing I'd like to say, this program is not about diagnosing or treating disease in any way, and we are not going to be talking about supplements today. What we're going to be talking about is we're going to be talking about the amazing body that you have and how you can be empowered to make great information. So, not diagnosing, treating disease, and we want you to know that, but we are about addressing disease in a pandemic world. So let's come back to the question, Dr. Conard, and that is, what is the state of health and wellness in the U.S.?
So thank you, Michael. And before we jump in that, I do want to acknowledge and thank you for your introduction. But there was one glaring omission that I want to make sure that we have on the table for our conversation today. And that is that, first and foremost, I'm a very devout Christian, and I believe in God. I believe in the power of His Word and His presence in our life. I believe that He is present in our life. And so much of what happens to each of us as individuals is really Him leading us to that next place. Like, what is there next to be done for us as individuals? And it will arise in front of us. He will give us the answer, and it is for us to lean into, not away from, the challenges that are presented. And in that, to the degree we're experiencing joy, peace, patience, kindness, love, self-control, we are on the right track. And what is clear to me is that a spirit of fear, a spirit of greed, envy, lust, gluttony, the things that are not of God, when we're experiencing those, we need to really take a deep breath, slow down, turn around, and go the other direction. And what I see in America today is, in the state of health and well-being or wellness, is I see a spirit of fear, and it breaks my heart because, as you pointed out in the introduction, it matters what you think. It matters what you do. And in fact, with the Human Genome Project and epigenetics, what we know is that how you think, what you do, and what you do, and we're going to go over a lot of those things today, things you can do to live life powerfully during a pandemic, makes a huge difference in how you are physically. So the state of health and wellness in the United States is scared, afraid, in fear, isolated, lonely. And I challenge those listening today to say, get behind me. That is not God's will for us as individuals, for our communities, or for our country. And that's really what I hope at the end of this podcast today, we can show people a different way. Because what you see on the news today, you know, it's selling a lot of articles. It's selling a lot of, whether that be on news, TV, or print. And I understand that, and I respect that, because I don't think there's anything wrong with capitalism. But what it's not doing is giving Christians, giving us, giving the people on this call, the message on how to live powerfully during the pandemic. So I wanted to just get that out there. I want to set the table. And then, Michael, let's get very aggressive about pointing to what we can do to live powerfully and what not to do to shoot ourselves in the foot during the pandemic.
Yeah, and I think what you just did there was come back to that, aligning ourselves biblically. Okay, well, let's put another word, aligning ourselves spiritually. So that alignment is really important too, the decision-making process that we use, because if we are living in fear and not in promise. When I read from Genesis all the way through to Revelation, what stands out to me is God continually promising to His people and those for generation thereafter that if you will do these things, that none of these diseases will come upon you. You will live, okay, as far as with, like that tree planted by the rivers of water, and you will be prosperous in everything that you do, and no weapon formed against you can prosper. Those are the things that I believe from a biblical, from a spiritual standpoint, and Doc, you mentioned that you're a Christian. From that standpoint, they are the life source to us to be able to live above the circumstances of life. Well, there's clinical data, and we'll get into that, because as a doctor, every single patient that that you see, obviously there is clinical data that is supporting whatever element of illness or disease that would be there, but it's also indicating how well they are. So before I go into what we can do, I want to bring forth these facts. And this is according to the American Heart Association, because we're not hearing this in our news today. What we're hearing is we're hearing COVID deaths. We are not hearing the fact that the way that we have lived for the past, let's just say, 50 years. The American Heart Association in 2019 revealed this: 606,000 people die per year from heart disease. Well, that's 50,000.5 people per month that are dying from heart disease. And I'll let you comment here in a minute, Doc, because heart disease is a chronic inflammatory. It's also a lifestyle. All right. So then American Cancer Association, if you go to them, okay, it's not 606. Theirs is 600,000. So cancer is right there alongside of heart disease, that cancer has a 50,000 people per month. Well, I don't like to bring this up, but it's a fact. And this is from Johns Hopkins, okay, as far as from their medical research. In medical error, this is prior to pandemic, we were accidentally in the system killing medical error, okay, for overdose, whatever those are, 20,000 people. Well, I'm up to 120,000 people per month pre-pandemic that were dying, okay? And then if you add pulmonary infection, pneumonia would fall into that category, that's another 10,000 people, okay, per month. We weren't concerned as a population during that time, even though we were, okay, dying off at 130,000 people per month. Now, all of a sudden, we're filled with fear. I think this is our opportunity to realize what you said, Doc, in the beginning. You know, were our lifestyle choices, were they driven by appetites? Were they driven by our lust? Were they driven by the undiscipline of the biblical view, the clinical view, the scientific view? I want you to address that for a minute, because those are the numbers. You as a doctor, how would you tell us that we should respond to that?
I would say for each individual that is listening to our podcast, it's vital that you ask yourself the question, where am I? And I need to get real about my health, not afraid, get real. And there's a big difference. And so what you pointed out, Michael, is that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and our body, our vehicle, often can carry us through to over 100 years and have us live life vitally and be able to serve our purpose, our spiritual and our earthbound purpose, right? Or our spiritual purpose on earth. So what you're pointing out is that we as individuals are inadvertently choosing to shorten our life or decrease the quality of our life, often innocently, often without appreciating that we're doing it. But we are. And so the way that I break what you just said down is with each individual person that I have the opportunity to get to know, I first of all look at their numbers. What are the vital signs that tell me what's going to happen to them? Because that gives me an idea of the acuteness. If their numbers are way out of whack, then I've got, you know, it's a 3-alarm fire or 7-alarm fire or 20-alarm fire. I mean, it's a problem. We got to act. We got to go. We got to do what we've got to do. And that's where medicines, procedures, surgeries, there is a place for those. If their numbers are not an emergency, they're just out of balance, then we start asking the question, how am I sowing the seeds in my life? How am I choosing my 10 essentials? How am I working through that to give me these numbers? Because this is nothing more or less than a report card. These are lagging indicators of telling me how I'm doing. And in those numbers, you will see the premature death. You will see the heart attacks, the strokes, the kidney failure, the amputations, the blindness, all the things from diabetes and vascular disease that include, of course, strokes. You will see the predisposition and the risk that is related to cancer. It gives you a reflection of the food they're eating and the other exercises they're doing and things. And you'll also get a feel for how is that person choosing to manifest their power in their lives? You know, if we go back to when I went into practice, which is in the last century, right when the Human Genome Project was just being imagined, we thought that what we're going to do when we did the Human Genome Project is we're going to go in, we're going to be able to take someone's DNA, sequence it, and tell them what they're going to die of and when they were going to die. And what has been absolutely a revelation to the scientific and medical community is what we discover is people have a gene for cancer, let's say colon cancer, and a gene that would prevent colon cancer. And they have both genes. And the thing that decides which one is turned on, turned off, is the person and the choices that they make. They have a gene for a stroke or not stroke. What turns on the gene for the stroke is their choices. What turns it off is their choices. And I could go through every major chronic disease. And what we have discovered is that we, through our choices, determine how well and how long we live because our DNA is set up to take us in different directions depending upon our choices.
Now, that is empowering. And that is a way for us to live powerful is when we understand, okay, lifestyle choices trigger the on and off, good genes, bad genes. And I hope that you as a listener, that you understand how powerful that you are in the way you can live and the outcomes that you can have. Because I mean, this is extremely insightful, and it's not common knowledge, but it is, like Dr. Conard said, it is revelation to the medical community. But I want to come back to the three things we talked about in the beginning. What's the biblical or the spiritual, the clinical, and the scientific? That lines up exactly to a biblical God factor in our life, and that is choose, the power of choice that is available to us. I mean, it's the most powerful thing that I know of that we have in our life, and that is the God-given ability to choose. And it can lead us to amazing outcomes in our life along with our health and well-being. All right, so you're talking about these conditions, and if I could, this might feel like a sidebar, but I also read your article, Dr. Conard, in regard to living life powerfully. And you put a question out, how concerned should we be? And so I want to kind of follow up that with our, you know, with our listeners today. How concerned should they be in these, let's just say, underlying conditions? Because if you go to medicine.net, and that is another entity under the EMED, and we know that these are, you know, quality people and the insights that they have. Well, when they go through and they talk about COVID and they talk about prevention, you see there, but they get to, okay, if you have these conditions, you should be really concerned. Obesity is number one. Well, so is type 2 diabetes, okay, pre-diabetes. Then you can get into the other, but as far as a general population in comparison, we have heard about Vietnam and how well they're doing in a pandemic world. Well, in the research that I did today, okay, Vietnam has a 2.1% of the adult population that would be categorized as obese. The United States is the number, I'll say number one leading obese nation amongst developed nations. And we are at 36%, and that's probably even low in comparison, you know, to really if you went down to the 30 BMI being what is the indicator. They were higher than that. So when we think about this, address that a little bit more because we don't need to fear. Yes, there's urgent things that we can do, but talk me a little bit more in regard to how concerned should our listener be.
So, Michael, one of the things I want people to hear in this message of choice is a very positive message. I think that most of us, when we hear this, go into blame and shame. And if we have any medical conditions, if we have any chronic conditions, if we have congestive heart failure or COPD or emphysema or diabetes, any of those things, we feel like there's something wrong with us and that we are losers and we made mistakes and we've blown it. And, you know, the way that our mind works is to tend to be very blame and shame oriented. And again, that's not of God. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about wherever you are right now, you can live a fulfilling life. It may be incredibly challenged given the things that you have going on in your bodies, or you may have a cancer like pancreatic cancer or brain cancer where we don't understand if there's anything that could have been done differently, or Huntington's chorea. You get the idea. There are certain things that people just have happened to them. But whether it's a lightning strike, which is what I would call those, or if it is a something that we literally made choices. They were benign neglect. They were not malice aforethought. We didn't do this thinking, oh, I think I'll get my right leg amputated, or I do this think I'll go blind or go into kidney failure. Nobody does that. Everybody gets up every day doing the best they can with what they know. But I believe that if you hear the message of choice and you do not go into blame and shame, which will take you down the anxiety depression train, and that is not the message here, but rather you go, what is one thing today I can do? What is something that I can do to bless my body? How do I give my body the message that I love it instead of, you know, be hard or do things that will do negative things to it? And if you will go there, literally in taking three deep breaths, you change the future of your life. So I really want people to hear this message in a very positive way as we start to talk about risk and how concerned we need to be about COVID.
Yeah, very, very important that we all understand that, because it certainly is not, you know, about the mistakes. It's about the empowerment to live powerfully. And there's, you know, you talk about the lightning strikes, Doc. I mean, there's always the exceptions, but it's not the exceptions that make up the general population. They are the exceptions, and we don't understand that. And we pray. I have a prayer time, you know, at the company at the end of every, you know, every order that people place with the, you know, with our phone center, and we give them the choice of being able to pray with them. We believe that the majority of the people have the opportunity to make good choices in whatever stage they're in and whatever age they're in. They can experience greater wellness. Now, I don't put it in optimal wellness. I put it in greater wellness. And when it's wellness, it's also well-being. I mean, if you're at death's door today, one thing I know, you can make the choices and the decisions and empower yourself to live in peace and expectation of the next life and be able to influence everybody around you. So again, very important that you hear what Dr. Connor said. It's not about mistakes, not about, you know, the shame part of it. It's about empowerment, living life powerfully. So if we're in these, and I think we've talked enough about the underlying conditions, so now let's just say we live in a pandemic world, Doc, and I'm going to come to you kind of like a patient. What should I do now? What's my urgent things that I should do right now, okay, in order to be able to live in this world and live powerfully? What could I do urgently? And then we'll talk about the important things.
So what I would say to you, if you're my patient and you came to me, Michael, is there's two sets of things we need to talk about. We need to talk about how do you stay safe when you go into the world, and how at risk are you, and how concerned should you be? We're also going to talk about the fact that your body, your immune system in particular, you could go out and someone could cough on you with a big dose of COVID and you may not get sick. So there's no determination because you're exposed to a pandemic. Right now we're in COVID, it'll be flu, it'll be other things as we go through the next 6 months, does not mean you are destined to get sick if you're exposed to that. And that's incredibly exciting to me when I realize they've done studies where they have literally taken SARS virus, which is in the same family as the COVID, virus, and they cough it or blow it into people's faces, and they ask the question, how many times do people get sick, and when do they get sick, and when do they not get sick? And there's a 30 to 40% reduction in illness just by doing some of the things that we're going to talk about on this recording.
All right. So as your patient and the urgent things that I'm going to do today, what can I do today? I can wear a mask because we're hearing that everywhere. Okay. That's urgent. That's important for me to do. So I got that. So I'm good. You don't have to tell me about the mask, doc. Okay. I'm wearing my mask. What else can I do? Okay. Today in being able to live a powerful life.
All right. So first thing I say, Michael, look in the mirror. Are you 65 years or older? Where do you live? Do you have underlying medical conditions? As you mentioned, obesity, even more than obesity, is what we call metabolic syndrome, which is where your body's not dealing well with sugar and energy fats as you take them into your body. So are you a person with diabetes or prediabetes? Are you a person with hypertension, high cholesterol, et cetera? So you're looking at yourself in the mirror. And then, of course, if you have any serious diseases or ongoing chronic diseases, or you're on medications that weaken your immune system, as we talked about a minute ago, you have to just kind of look at yourself and say, how smart is it for me to be out and about? How much should I try to be interacting with other people in ways that don't require me to be within 6 feet of them or could expose me to people who are sick? So I'm just going to lay that out there. The first thing starts with, what is your risk? And age does play a significant role in that. Then, even if you've got diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, coronary artery disease, congestive heart failure, cancer, you're on chemotherapy, that is not to say that you have to hole up and be a miser and not be around other people and not have great social interaction and not feel a sense of belonging to community and communion with God. So you know, don't again hear that as you're going to be alone and isolated, which is what I'm experiencing. I was on a call with a group of about 40 other people and literally listened to six of them over a course of an hour just decompensate about how lonely and alone and isolated they felt and how disconnected that they felt. And, you know, the whole conversation evolved into, how do you stay connected with God? How do you stay connected with family? How do you stay connected with the people around you in a pandemic situation so that you don't end up feeling emotionally isolated and alone? And by the time we went through that hour, every single one of the people who had decompensated said, man, you know, I was up in my thoughts. I was telling myself I was alone and isolated. And even on this 1 hour call with us looking at each other on Zoom, I think, and having the conversation, I feel completely different about what's going on in my life today. So realize that, again, choice and power that you have in figuring out how you're going to be with other people and whether it's best to do it from the safety of virtually connecting versus in-person connecting. Does that make sense? Does that resonate?
Well, it does, because we know loneliness, you know, is also, along with anxiety, it's in a epidemic environment worldwide of people feeling lonely. And I think it's really important, you know, coming from you as a family medicine doctor, to recognize that and for us to recognize that, because from a biblical standpoint, we know that we're not alone. God is there with us. He's omnipresent, and all we have to do is open ourselves up and invite him. But we are social people. Okay? Therefore, the message of social distancing is almost, you know, you talked about mental, you know, our thought process. Even the fact that we say social distancing, I think, is the wrong statement. It's physical distancing. Social distance, we are social creatures. So do you have any input in regard to, if I am vulnerable, how do I engage? Can I engage telephone-wise? Can I engage? What should I do?
Well, and again, we have to look at you and look at your life and look at how you can connect with other people. We look at your age and your ability to technologically be connected with other people. Some people, a telephone is the most that they can do. Other people, oh my gosh, they're doing all sorts of different things with Zoom and other, you know, kind of meetings, Teams and all those things, many of which are free. There's no cost here. So the thing I would ask people to do, and I want to be really specific here, Michael. I don't want to be theoretical. I want to be really specific. We take a person, they're feeling isolated, anxious, alone. What is the hormone that comes up in their body? It's epinephrine, adrenaline, cortisol, stress hormones. What does that do to your body? Well, your body thinks there's a lion or tiger or bear, oh no, about ready to jump out and scare you or get you or eat you. And so it releases a bunch of sugar into the blood. What does sugar do? Sugar stimulates the release of insulin. What does insulin do? It tells your fat cells to grow. What does it do to your heartbeat? It speeds it up. What does it do to your blood vessels? It tells them to contract, not just insulin, but the epinephrine and norepinephrine. It tells them to contract. So your blood pressure goes up. And so literally, in feeling isolated and alone, it is shutting your body down, and it is hurting your risk of heart attack, of stroke, of diabetes, and the other things that we talked about. So it's important to realize in the moment is when you choose. And anything that has you feel connected or in touch with or bonding with other people works. So picking up the phone and calling somebody, even if you're just talking about the weather, but you feel a sense of connection, that works. Picking up the phone and reaching out for somebody else you think may be lonely or alone, and really blessing them with having time with them. It's not about something fancy or high tech. It's just about human connection, however you can get it. And you know your technological skills. You know your environment. You know your community and your family and how you could literally chat with them and have them feel a moment of happiness. Because in that moment of happiness, what happens? Well, the hormones I just talked about drop down. There's a hormone in your brain called oxytocin, and it's like it's the love hormone. It's the hormone that you get when someone hugs you or you hug somebody, and this is a virtual hug. And when that goes out, you feel a sense of connectedness, a feeling of love, a feeling of peace, of calmness. You know, it's kind of the hormone that when you're living your life the way that we're meant to live our life, it goes up among other hormones. So it's about you feeling connected and you feeling a sense of calmness, which again, it could be in prayer, might be the way that it works for you. Maybe reading the Psalms or reading, I love to read John. That's my favorite book of the Bible. And I put it on in my headphones. There's a lake not too far away, and I'll go walk around that and listen to the just the comforting voice of God as it's manifested through John. But again, it doesn't matter as much what you do. It matters what that, how that touch moves and inspires you as a human being, as you slow your breathing down, as you focus on the positive or the loving or the caring or the giving. And, you know, I think you do it so beautifully on Keys to Creating Wellness, where you talk about be forgiving, give and receive love, practice gratitude, develop acceptance in this pandemic time. And really focus on your relationship with God. And as silly, quote unquote, from a medical standpoint, as people may think, oh, well, what about the clinical? What about the scientific? There is ample evidence that by doing those things, you actually change your physical body. You change whether you're going to get cancer or heart disease. You change whether you're going to have that heart attack or stroke. So in this pandemic time, I think God is calling us to look at our frenetic, busy lifestyles, the tyranny of the urgent that runs our lives, and saying, take a breath and find a way to do things differently. Deepen your relationship with me. Accept the situation physically, but find a way to be grateful, forgiving, and give and receive love in what you're doing.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Doc. I have engaged with my father, who is 93, and you know him well, and he has been isolated now because of the rule here in Arizona, and this is true all over our country. Those who are in special convalescent homes, he's really felt the effects of isolation. So one of the things that I did, you know, you can't tell him don't feel lonely, because he does feel lonely. You can't say, okay, don't feel like you're cut off, because he is cut off. So I come at it from a different way. And this is kind of my call to action, since you brought it up, Doc, in the way that you said it, you know, that we can do something in engaging with other people. So I decided I'm gonna call my father every day, and I'm going to spend a few minutes with him, and I'm going to say, okay, Dad, okay, I'm reaching out, and what we're going to do is we're going to have our time of Scripture together, and we're going to read. Then what you're going to do is you're going to think of somebody that you know that you can call and that you can inspire them. Well, we've been doing this now, and it's just amazing the difference in his spirit and in his mind and in the clarity that he now looks forward to my call. We have our time together, and then he looks forward that he can make his call. Well, he no longer feels lonely because now he feels purpose. And I love call to actions. So I would invite you as a listener today, based on what Doc has said and all of the clinical aspect of that and the health aspect of that, but let's also talk about it from a purpose side of it. You can reach out to those who are, okay, isolated for whatever reasons they are, and you can uplift them, but they also can have purpose in their life. We can make a big difference in our world, and that's what wellness does. It gives us that vitality and that energy and those positive emotions of love and gratitude, you know, and forgiveness and acceptance. And with that relationship with God, you don't know the power that we could have as a group of believers across this world in this time period. So I invite you to make that a call to action into your life. All right, let's take just a few minutes here, Doc, and go into, because we've been talking about the urgent, we've been talking about the pandemic, but long term, I mean, this pandemic's going to get over with. We're going to get on the other side of it. Yeah. And we're all going to be better people as a result of it. We are going to come out of it, and we are going to – some people are going to find new careers. Some people are going to find new entrepreneurial opportunities. Some people are going to realize how powerful that their choices are. Some are going to realize how powerful prayer – we're going to be better people. But now let's talk about the important long term, because what can we do, okay, related to the physical aspect of it, of wellness? If we're going to have vitality and energy to fulfill our purpose, then in my book, okay, and also, Doc, you talk about this all the time, let's just take food. Food is thy medicine. I mean, we're aware of, right, of that statement. Yep. Talk to us about the importance of the decision, the importance of the decision of the food that we eat. How does that affect us physically and emotionally, even in a clinical environment?
We talked about the immune system, and there are foods that boost your immune system and foods that shut your immune system down. Now, for those of you who are like, what is this immune system stuff? What does that mean? Well, you could think of it like the Army. In the United States, you know, we have police, we have fire, we have the National Guard, then we have the Marines, Army and Air Force, Navy, and that is the protection system that keeps us safe. Inside your body, you have a similar set of agents that are working to keep you safe. I mean, it literally starts with your skin and intestinal tract, the tract where food goes through, and it goes all the way from there through the rest of your body, through the blood and everything else. So the question is, how do you help your fire, your police department, your military be stronger and be ready, as opposed to literally have them be stressed out, exhausted, overworked, and distracted, which allows the enemy to come into your shores. And right now we're talking about the pandemic, that there's an enemy that is lurking that wants to come in. So food can either build it up or knock it down. Let's talk about foods that build it up first, okay? And I'm going to go kind of slow, but you guys probably already know some of these things. So when we talk about fruit, And actually, let's do it this way. There are fruits that actually can stress out your immune system, and there are fruits that can build your immune system. So the ones that build your immune system, we're talking about blackberries, blueberries, raspberries, or, you know, pomegranates are examples of cranberry juice. Not a lot, but some cranberry juice, or Concord grape juice actually has some things that we would talk about. Then there are fruits that are just really sugary that you have to be careful to only eat them in moderation. Modern American orange juice, or modern North American orange juice, has way too much sugar in it. A lot of the fruit juices, quote-unquote, that are natural, quote-unquote, when you look at the label and you see the number of carbohydrates, if that number of carbohydrates per serving is up above 15, then you should dilute it down so that it's not too much. So in terms of fruits, you've got the sugary ones and you've got the really healthy ones. Vegetables are fantastic. We're talking about Brussels sprouts, mushrooms, and then you've got things like, well, really, just think about vegetables that give you a lot of fiber. Also, the ones that are really some chili peppers and things like that, that are, and spices that you would put on, actually boost the immune system. You've got nuts like walnuts and chestnuts that are fantastic. Olive oil is fantastic. Seafood tends to be very, very good. Even Pacific oysters, an example that's something you might not think about. So there's this whole group of foods that build you up and keep your immune system strong. And then there's the processed American foods, the things that are made with the three white powders, salt, sugar, and refined flour. And it's not that those are evil or bad, but you have to be very thoughtful about how much you take in and what you take it in with. So it's one thing if you're eating sauerkraut and a relatively lean meat with that, say even a sausage that's made out of bison or wild game, elk, something that's not a really fatty, heavy meat, then having some bread with that, particularly if it's sourdough bread, would actually be very healthy. And would be something that would be excellent in terms of helping your immune system. The sauerkraut is a fermented food. So fermented foods are great for your body, like kimchi. Then you've got the yogurt. Plain yogurt is another example of something that would be good. I'm drinking kombucha as we speak today. That's another product that's fermented. So those things build your immune system. And, you know, Michael, those are just a couple of them, but I think that, you know, in that you can see that there are real opportunities to eat healthy food, and then there are opportunities to eat the modern American diet, which has got a lot of the three white powders in it, which can be very, very traumatic to your body and stressful.
Well, are they not contributing into our, you know, our diabetes? And I say diabetes in a pre and type 2. I mean, we know there's 5% of the of the diabetes population that would have type 1. So there's 95% are type 2 or pre-diabetic. Well, in my research, as far as worldwide, America happens to be the leading developed nation as far as when it comes to having the number of percentage of population, adult population, from 20 to 79. Okay, well, if you go down to Sweden, Sweden has less than half, okay, of that diabetic population in comparison to the U.S. Okay, and Norway has less than half. Okay, Vietnam has less than half. We come back to the vulnerability. Well, if obesity is and diabetes is, we lead the developed nations of the world. We lead in those two particular categories. I relate that to food.
I think there's data, lots of data to support exactly that, Michael. And I think we lost one thing. You know, one of the things that is in the Bible is the conversation about fasting and the role of fasting in our lives. Because one of the things that we see with the American diet is we eat on a schedule. We eat anywhere from 3 to 6 meals a day. And so regardless of what you eat, if you eat it 3 to 6 times a day in the quantities Americans are eating it, it's literally fattening yourself up. I mean, like literally the same way we do cattle when we're ready to take them to slaughter. And we're doing that to ourselves. One of the big exercises I have patients do in my practice is stop eating breakfast and only eat when you're hungry. And the first question many have asked is, what does hunger feel like? I don't get hungry. I eat on a clock. And so I don't know what you're talking about. And so then we have to differentiate between thirsty, hungry, tired, stressed. Those feel different in your body. And once you identify which one's popping up on you, then you can respond appropriately. But until you understand that, you can't. So, you know, I think it's a complex subject. But to start with, eating the foods that we talked about and eating them in a and not feeling the compulsion to eat all the time. If your body has to constantly be digesting food, then your immune system is going to be working on keeping you safe from the contaminants and things in the food, not going to be responding to the environment as well. So give your body a break. And right now I'm doing 16-8 every day. And I encourage my patients to do the same thing.
Yeah, my wife, Susan, she does the 16-8 also. In regard to another thing that's important that they can do, okay, that's in the area of exercise. I know we see the pain for gain, and we see the sweat and all of those things, but talk to us, Doc, in regard to just exercise. How does that support the immune system, and what kind of exercise do we need to do in order to have a strong? Because we're talking about living strong and powerful. Well, we want a strong and powerful immune. Exercise plays a part of it, or physical activity, and let's just drop the word, exercise. What do we need to do to build our immune system through physical exercise?
Well, it's not put on tight clothes and go jog for an hour. I mean, that, you know, the image of exercise we have in America are fitness sports athletes going out and playing basketball or football, tennis, doing really intense things. What we know about the immune system and exercise, which is really, again, when we talk about avoiding the pandemic, is that not enough exercise is not healthy. Too much exercise is not healthy. So 20 to 30 minutes of exercise every day is what we want to do to boost the immune system and protect you from infection. So, for me, during the pandemic, before the pandemic, I was going to a gym where I was inside. I was going to do yoga, and I'd be inside with 20 other people in a poorly circulated room. All of that's gone. So for me, I've had to completely reinvent my physical activity. And so for me, it's going on walks. It's listening to that. This sounds really stupid, Michael, maybe, but I get up in the morning and I throw my little headphones on and I get my Audible New York Times and I go walk. And sometimes if I'm feeling really good, I'll jog and then walk and jog and then walk. But I don't go sprint. I'm an old man now. I'm in my seventh decade of life here in a couple of days. And so I don't want to, I'm not interested in trying to run a marathon anymore or do things that are overly intense. And so just walking with occasional walking faster or jogging to get my heart rate up for 20, 30 minutes a day makes a huge difference.
Okay, as your patient, if I exercise, okay, if I do walking for 20 to 30 minutes a day, and I do that 5 days a week, is that supporting my immune system sufficiently? Depending on the age, I'm sure that, the individual is, but okay, my age. Does that do it?
Absolutely will support you in boosting your immune system. Now, does that maximize it? Well, I do know you well, Michael, and I know you're a super achiever. So for you, I would have you doing 30 minutes of yoga two or three times a week to stretch your body out. I'd have you do push-ups. Now, I know how strong you are. You can do regular push-ups, but for my patients, often they'll put their knees on the ground and just try to do 10 push-ups because that's strengthening, and that actually is different than going for a walk. For you, as a super achiever, I'd have you do stretching. I'd have you do strengthening, which would be things like sit-ups or push-ups. And with your knee on the ground is fine. And then I would also have you do the walking. And if you did all of those things and you ended up with 150 minutes a week of, exercise that has you perspiring a little more, breathing harder, and not overdoing it, that is really a great program that would be very helpful.
Okay.
The other thing real quickly, please, before you jump in, is exercise, play, is stress reduction. So I would ask people, when you're out exercising, do you feel calmer? Are you enjoying yourself? Are you getting pleasure from it? Or are you stressed out, feeling like someone's told you what to do and you're angry about it and you wish you weren't there and you're hot and miserable? You know, if that's the way that you're approaching it, it's not nearly as valuable as if you'll just take it as an opportunity to go out, take some deep breaths, and spend some time in nature, or, you know, and get your heart rate up a little bit and sweat a little bit.
So then for our listeners, they've got some good inside tips there and what they can do to build their immune through physical activity. What if they're not doing physical activity? What can you help us understand just real quickly what the impact is when we don't do physical? I mean, we can say, okay, it doesn't build your immune system, but there's got to be more than that, because I've heard that now being a couch potato is worse than being a smoker. So there's got to be something going on here when we don't move, because the lymph system, the cardio. Give us some insight there, just so people understand. We want to empower you as a listener. Understand how important it is for you to move. But if you don't move, here's what's going on.
So the way I think of that, Michael, is that it's like a pond. And we've all seen ponds that are stagnant. And, you know, pretty soon they start, all this stuff starts to grow in it. And it's black and ugly and dark green. And it starts to smell and bubble up and the fish die. And it's just really distasteful. It's not a place you'd want to go sit and think about. Whereas you compare that to a stream where you've got this beautiful rushing water and it's crystal clear and, you know, the fish are vital and alive and the birds are, you know, down and drinking out of it. And you get to see the color of the rocks and things as the water flows over them and the sun shining off it. That's the difference between a body that is in action and a body that's stagnant. And when you think about what is the slime in the pond, it's sugar that didn't get that's just floating around in your blood that's not being used. It's fat that's floating around that's not being used. It's your muscles, which are actually eating the sugar and the fat out of the blood. They're pulling it out and they're breaking it down and they're using it for fuel. The analogy I use for that is a car. You take a car and put it in the garage and don't run it for 2 or 3 years and you go out and try to start it, it's a mess. But if you use to drive the car a little bit every day, it really it's optimal. It works really well. So both in the sense of the stagnant pool of things that aren't moving, and that's the lymphatic system, that's the venous system, that's the arterial system, that's sweat moving out of your pores, that's constipation and having food get stored in your body and all the toxins that come with all the bacteria that are in that. It's just a very putrid situation, as opposed to when you're drinking water, when you're eating the high fiber foods and the healthy foods we talked about, the fermented foods we talked about, when you're moving and you're sweating and you're getting, you know, because we excrete, we remove things from our body many ways. One is deep breathing. When you're out being active, you take a deep breath and you blow it out. Well, we've all been around somebody who maybe had a drink and all of a sudden you're going, wow, I can tell that you're getting rid of that alcohol through your breath, right? Or for that garlic is really being removed from your body through your breath right now. Feel free to not breathe this way. But, the breathing of exercise gets things out. The muscle squeezing are getting your venous supply back and your lymphatic. And lymphatic is your sewer system and pushing all that stuff back toward your heart where it goes into your filter system. And so it literally is the difference between a beautiful rushing river stream versus a stagnant putrid pond, and whether you're active, and that's active eating food, healthy foods, drinking water, moving your body, and just, you know, participating in life.
Yeah, that's great information. And for us as listeners, you know, just to inspire us visually also to know that when we, you know, sometimes we don't feel. We don't feel energetic. We don't feel like physical activity. I use those mental images, and one of my favorite is simply the toilet in my house. Okay, it's there to flush, and I think the same thing as far as related to, you know, my system, my lymphatic, et cetera. There's no way we can live in a world that we don't take in toxins, that we don't take in those things that are negative to the body. But we have an amazing body that when we make the right choices, it can flush, it can remove, and we can live with greater wellness. And that is exciting, powerful news in spite of living in a pandemic world. Well, we've covered a lot today, Dr. Conard, and you've been very helpful in helping us understand the things that we can do urgent. Okay, we understand what would be considered to be our risk factors so we can identify them, and then the things that we can do in regard to important lifestyle decisions. Let's go one more that I think is, you know, is that we haven't talked about that is important. Stress is very impactful, okay, on the body, on the mind, and on the spirit. And that can come from fear, can come from loneliness, can come from a lot of different, you know, relationship issues, et cetera. Talk to us as a physician in how important it is that we manage our stress.
So I want to expand it a teeny bit because remember the story I told at the beginning about people who had the SARS virus blown in their face and that people got it up to 40% less often, got sick if they had two things in their life. And the two things were enough sleep, and we're talking about, you know, for the average adult, 7 to 8 hours hours of sleep a night. And secondly is they were managing their stress effectively. And so literally, Michael, in a pandemic world, whether you live or die, whether you get sick or don't get sick, may very well depend on how well you deal with your stress and how much rest you give your body. And so let's talk about what is stress. And this is the choice moment. We're back to the choice. And I know it doesn't feel that way. It didn't feel that way for me when I was young. It felt like people made me angry. People made me sad. People made me lonely. And that was the world I was in, and I couldn't help it. That's the way they made me. And, you know, I think that's, for me, where the quickening of my spirit in converting into a spiritual person, a person who's spiritually in touch, all of a sudden I got really clear that the most important relationship was with me and God, and I needed to rely on that, not on reacting to my environment, because we have a choice. You know, you don't have a choice about what happens to you. You have a choice about how you react to what happens to you.
Yes.
And so if you feel like other people have control of you or other people are making you do things, that's a lie. That is a lie. Say, get behind me. I have a choice. In between the stimulus, which is what happened to me, and my response, there's a second. And in that second, I can take action. So dealing with stress is actually, for me and for the patients I get the opportunity to counsel, is about the moment between the stimulus and the response. And in my old life, Scott's old life, it was stimulus response. There was literally no time between it. And I was the tail, they were the dog. When I understood that there's stimulus, pause, response, and in that moment, I had choice. I had choice to hear the scriptures. I had choice to either be in my amygdala, which is the part of your brain that's reacting and is afraid, mm-hmm. or in my forebrain, which is the part of my brain that has me live my life on purpose. Then things started to change. Now, it's taken, you know, 20 years of deep breathing, of relaxation, you know, kind of meditation and prayer. And I love yoga because it's physical activity during a period of time when I'm taking deep breaths and I'm kind of spiritually charging up. But everybody's different. So it doesn't matter what you choose. It's about choosing to calm yourself in that moment. And when you feel like things are happening to you that you don't have any control over, I challenge you listening to this today, go talk to other people. Go talk to people who are in TriVita that are physically, emotionally, and spiritually living their lives. Because, and just say, I don't feel like I have a choice in this, and whatever that is, ask three people, ask eight people. And some will say, oh, you're right, you're just a victim. Other people, though, will say, you know what, I had that happen to me, and here's how I started to feel empowered in that situation, and how I started to either say no or yes to the opportunities or to the challenges. So to me, stress and stress management is not, stress isn't, if I say stress isn't real, I don't want people to hear that like you don't experience stress. All of us do. But stress is how you perceive the things that are happening to you. And one of the most comforting thoughts in my life, Michael, is that God never gives me something to deal with that I am not going to be able to deal with it. In that moment, it may feel overwhelming. But there have been many times in my life when I think, I don't have it. I don't have what it's going to take to deal with this. And then I just remember, God is with me, and God wouldn't give me a challenge I can't overcome or I can't respond to. And so whether it's loneliness, fear, a physical challenge that's come up, a financial challenge, a social challenge, someone has died that I love, that was close to me, I know that I can deal with this. Now, I have a choice. And in that, all of a sudden I go from stressed out and miserable to hopeful. And the power of hope in our lives cannot be underestimated.
Yes, the power of hope. I think we have given a lot of hope today in how people can live with greater wellness, and the choices that they have available to them are powerful choices, and that purpose is so significant in our lives. I want to thank you, Doc, as far as related to it, but I want to give you the last word. So thank you for spending all this time. But is there one last important message that you would like to give to those who are listening?
It would be easy in a pandemic world to retreat, to give up, to quit trying, to feel shut off and isolated and alone. But you can live powerfully in a pandemic world. You are intended to live powerfully in a pandemic world, and you will overcome, and you will develop and strengthen muscles you didn't even know you had if you will look at this not as punishment or not through a lens of fear, but you'll look at it as the next challenge that God has for you in your life, that he is bringing to you as the opportunity for you to lean into, because he has wonderful and magnificent things planned for you that if you didn't develop those muscles, if you didn't have those strengths, you never would appreciate. So I would challenge everyone listening to this to live life powerfully during the pandemic.
Yes, that's great. Don't just live it, love it, and live with power. Thank you, Dr. Conard, and thank you for each one of you joining with us today on our Healthy You podcast. May you have a blessed, blessed week.
Thanks for listening to Healthy You. This is provided for your information only and may not be construed as medical advice or instruction. These statements are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. It is intended for your general knowledge only and not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment for any specific medical conditions. Always seek the advice of your physician with any question you may have regarding a medical condition.